This week in Retronauts, we're in your face and your eyes hurt. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm Jeremy Parrish, stumbling over my words, and I barely even had anything to drink. What the hell? And I know why I'm stumbling over my words. It's because this is like the fourth podcast I've recorded, in addition to two panels, here at Midwest Gaming Classic 2019. I'm so tired, and that's okay, because there's other people here who are going to help keep me going along. Who are these other people? That guy over there.
Hey, it's the boy who's virtually a man, Bob Mackie.
I'm sorry.
I thought of that one in the elevator.
Wow. So what don't we know about you? How old are you, Bob?
I'm still waiting for my bar mitzvah. And also to convert to Judaism. That comes first.
Right. That's a tricky
part. Very complicated, this process. I've learned this.
Also, who's here? I hear some other voices.
This is Caitlin Oliver, at SA Caitlin on Twitter, and the lady what broke Splatterhouse World Records and an amateur gaming historian.
Fantastic. And finally,
I am not true ending. Let's retry. This is Brian Clark of 1 Million Power.
Okay. Wow. I didn't come with anything punchy. I'm just punch drunk. So I guess that's good enough. That's the Game Boy experience, or the Virtual Boy experience in a nutshell. Sorry, I've been talking a lot about Game Boy. So I might accidentally mix up the names of my systems. That is because this is being recorded on the occasion of Game Boy's 30th anniversary, and what better way to celebrate that than by talking about the colossal failure that followed in its footsteps. That's right, Virtual Boy. I think a few years back we did, or maybe I did, a Virtual Boy micro episode, which was, 10 minutes long. That's not very long. And I would like to talk properly about Virtual Boy now that I have spent some time with the system and have a better understanding of it. I've played all the games that were released in America and a couple that were only released in Japan now. And it's been a learning experience. I've learned that, yes, this hardware has a lot of problems, but the games that were on the hardware, they're not actually so bad, most of them. There's some exceptions, but most of them are not actually so bad. What about y'all? What have your experiences been with Virtual Boy and Virtual Boy games?
I've never played it.
What? Never. Never at all.
Should I have brought mine?
Wow. There's one in the free play room. You should check it out.
Maybe I will. I never played it.
Take some disinfectant.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. The public Virtual Boy sticking my face into that. It seems like a real problem.
I should have brought mine.
Like, I
your disinfectant or your Virtual Boy?
My Virtual Boy.
Oh, okay. I assume at one point I will play it, but
It
came out in 1995, correct?
It did.
I was 13. I was their audience for the Virtual Boy. I was reading Nintendo Power.
And you were playing it loud.
And I was playing it extremely loud, and I thought it was stupid immediately. And I was their audience. I ate up everything they gave me, and then it failed immediately. So I was like, I was justified in thinking that was so stupid. In retrospect, and through your videos, Jeremy, I've learned that it wasn't that stupid. It was still very stupid in many different ways. But I've enjoyed looking at the games through your perspective. But the marketing did not work on me as a kid. Like when everything else worked on me.
Yeah, I mean the proposition they put forward wasn't really on point. It was like you're having a virtual reality experience, except you weren't. It wasn't really virtual reality. It was not Lawnmower Man. It was just like Mario, but with, like depth perception in his sprites. And not even a lot of real Mario. It was like weird offbeat Mario. Caitlin, what about you?
The first time I played the Virtual Boy was absolutely at a kiosk at Blockbuster Video. Because my dad would take me to Blockbuster Video every week to rent video games of whatever system I had at the time. But they definitely had a kiosk set up for the Virtual Boy, and I definitely stuck my face in it every time I was there. I ate it up. I was 12, so I guess I don't know what was different for me about the marketing, but it totally worked on me. Hmm. I thought it was the coolest thing. I never got to get one until much later in life, but I thought it was the bee's knees. Now, granted, I never played it for more than probably 15 minutes at a time because I was at the game store, video game store rental.
But it's recommended that you don't play for that long.
Right. Either. So I probably had about the best experience you could hope for, in a, at least in a public space. But I really enjoyed it.
I like that as qualifier at the end. At least in a public space. In private, well, me and Virtual Boy had a very different relationship.
I just think it would be a little... It would have been better when I was younger if I had played it maybe with headphones at a chair, for example.
Mm, yeah.
Because I was definitely standing the entire time. I played a lot of Mario Tennis.
Glasses now if you had played it at a younger age.
I still wear glasses. Oh, okay. I'm just not wearing them right now.
You'd have a cute dog with you guiding you around.
Having played it very recently because I own a working one, it's not comfortable to play for extended period. But also I don't think it's that bad. Like I would never go so far as to call it good. Don't take that as me saying it's great hardware, because it's not.
It's a qualified endorsement.
But I love bad things. That's kind of my deal. But I think it plays pretty well for what's presented to you, and how people talk about it is significantly worse than the actual experience by far. Like, I feel like people really overblow how bad it is, because it's not the worst thing ever by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I mean, going into the Virtual Boy Works project, which is kind of what prompted this, and that is a video series in which I am using real Virtual Boy hardware to capture video and basically play all the games and go into their history in chronological order. Going into this project, my thought was, I don't really think Virtual Boy is going to be as terrible as its reputation suggests. And while playing on that system is not comfortable or pleasant, the games have mostly surprised me. I've been pleasantly surprised by some of them, like Jack Brothers. Wow, why is that game so good? I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. It's so great. Everything that was, Shin Megami Tensei touched at the time just turned to gold, even Virtual Boy. Brian, what about you? Where do you come into this tale?
I was extremely excited for it at the time. I saved up what would have had to have been like paper route money at the time for me. Somewhere around the week it came out, I went to Toys R Us, played it at a kiosk, and spent my money on something else. So I definitely did not get one back then. I've since kind of turned around on it, became a little bit more interested in it, especially when I started looking at kind of some of the Japanese history behind it as well, which I can talk about a little bit later if we want to.
And as for myself, my initial encounter with Virtual Boy was at a Toys R Us kiosk where they had a Red Alarm set up, and I did not really get that game. It was a fully immersive 3D shooter built out of wireframes. I had played Star Fox, but that was a linear rail shooter. I had played Descent, which was a fully like 360 degrees in every direction shooter. This was somewhere in between, and it was, again, wireframes. So it was really hard for me to kind of parse what was happening on the screen. And I got backed into a corner and was like, I guess I'm stuck. The Virtual Boy had 2D pads, and you used that to navigate 3D space, which was really interesting. But I hadn't used a dual analog stick before. Like, this was several years before Sony would make that like a standard hardware feature. So I didn't really get it. I did not understand Virtual Boy when it came out, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I had glancing encounters with it through the years, playing a little bit of Wario Land or whatever, but never really spent any significant time with it. So when I decided to do Virtual Boy, the Virtual Boy Works project, it was actually several years ago, but there was no way to capture video at the time. It's only been with Furtex Virtual Tap mod, which is apparently was sold for like a week and then went off the market. Once that came out, then I was able to record directly from the hardware to RGB video. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And So this has been basically, you know, the past few months has been a whole new world for me. It's been very interesting and very educational.
A very small world.
A small world of like 21 games, but nevertheless, a small world with eye strain and headaches. But I have to say that being able to play on a television definitely mitigates that. I lose the 3D effect so I have to like jump back and forth sometimes to be like, what is happening here, or what is this game supposed to be like? So I get that sensation because the screen, you know, the visualizing still works despite the video tap. But yeah, playing it in monochrome on a television, like setting the red to grayscale, it basically becomes the most badass Game Boy ever made. It's like the, oh my God, if they had made like a follow-up Game Boy with these video display features, it would have been amazing. It's a super high resolution screen for the time. It has a higher resolution than any other console at the time. Like, I think, you know, PlayStation was 320x240. Like, you could do the high res mode occasionally, but no one did entire games in that, or very few people did. Whereas it's Virtual Boy is basically it's 3DS resolution pretty much. It's like 400x240. Or something along those lines. It's very, very high resolution, especially compared to the Game Boy. But it has like the same look of Game Boy. It's, you know, four monochrome sprites. When you see it in grayscale, you're like, oh, I get it. This is why they called it Virtual Boy, because it's like Game Boy visual technology just displayed in a different way. So let's talk a little bit about what it means by being displayed in a different way, because that's kind of the gimmick here. Virtual Boy, virtual reality, right? No, you're wrong. It's not virtual reality. It's something different altogether. How would you guys describe it?
Very red.
Right, but the 3D concept there, like the whole thing was, it's Virtual Boy, yeah. It's 3D. You're seeing three dimensions, but you're really not.
It's the 3DS effect, right? It's just like two flat layers. Two or three flat layers, the illusion of having like sort of like the parallax thing, but
yeah,
happening.
It's parallax. Yeah. And it's not built in layers. It's basically it creates the illusion of 3D by generating stereo images. So you're seeing it in both eyes. You're seeing a different image in both eye. And basically they create the sensation of distance by, you know, when they put two things that are kind of in the same space in each lens, then that seems near because it's, you know, it's up close and there's no like visual parallax going on. But when they put two things, you know, very far apart on the two screens, when they're occupying different space on those screens, then it creates the perception that, oh, that's far away. Or maybe it's the opposite. I can't remember. What the hell? No, that's how it is. Yes.
So I watch all your videos, and I don't know if you answered this question, but why red?
Okay, so this gets into the technology that powers Virtual Boy, and that was something created by, I looked this up, it is, come on phone, a guy named Alan Becker created something called the single linear array back in the early 80s, and the idea was that it was an alternate technology to LCDs and LEDs and you know, CRT televisions. It was a way to create a very energy efficient display screen that could be used in portable devices. So, you know, a CRT is an electron gun that quote unquote paints an image against a phosphor screen by like shooting lines and lines of images at the screen every like 60 times a second. It's a very fast gun. LEDs are strobing lights that, you know, are lit up in a different array. And then LCDs are crystals that, you know, are filled with liquid and then emptied when they're on or off to create the impression that something, you know, there's dark or light. But the single linear array is a single LED that is reflecting against a mirror and the mirror is spinning 50 times a second. Mm. And like the LED, it's kind of like a combination CRT and LED. Like the LED is creating like different images 50 times a second. And as the mirror spins, it's like drawing a different line of the display. So you have one row of LEDs, but they're firing off like however many, it's hard to explain, but basically it's one row of LEDs and the mirror is spinning so rapidly that it creates the illusion that there's an entire image and that it's animated. Mm. It's, you know, it's an interesting approach, but there's actually a spinning mirror inside your Virtual Boy. And they wanted it to be a portable system, but because they were like, well, maybe it's bad to have that much radiation right in front of someone's face, they had to put all this shielding in it, and all of a sudden it got really heavy. So it stopped being able to be a portable system, and it was a tabletop-mounted system. It's kind of emblematic of the problems that Virtual Boy encountered. There's a great article on Virtual Boy's history and tech by Retronaut Binge Edwards that you could check out on Fast Company. He wrote it like 4 years ago on the occasion of the 20th anniversary of the Virtual Boy and explains all of this in great detail. But basically, this technology existed and it is red because the cheapest and most available LEDs at the time were red LEDs.
Mm, makes sense.
Yeah. Like, you know, blue LEDs are actually a pretty recent, not an invention, but they the manufacturing on them only in like the past 20 years has come down enough that they've been mass market. Whereas red LEDs, like if you look back on an 80s electronics, it's always a red LED because that's just what everyone used. So Virtual Boy is red just because that's the LED that was cheap.
Not
the
to mention
tech.
Yep.
Yeah. Not to mention that's very on par for Nintendo too. I can't remember if the story's since been refuted or not, but for the longest time, people used to say the Famicom had red plastic because it was also the cheapest color of plastic you could get at the time.
I mean, that's entirely possible because Hiroshi Yamauchi, the president of Nintendo at the time, tasked engineer Masayuki Uemura to create a game system that could be sold for the equivalent of $99. Yeah. They ended up selling it for $150 because that was just crazy talk. Mm-hmm. Like, that was impossible. But yes, the Famicom was very much an effort exercise in cutting costs, but they still did weird things like put a microphone in the second controller. Why the hell not? So yeah, I mean, that's extremely Nintendo seasoned technology and cutting costs and finding compromises. I have read that the ability to have like a full, you know, RGB LED display was actually, they were right on the cusp of that when Virtual Boy launched. And if they had waited like another year to manufacture it, it would have been a full color system.
From what I had read, and I don't know how well substantiated this is. I mean, it was kind of rushed to market before it was ready to actually be released, or at least to the satisfaction of the designers of the system. Nintendo had kind of forced it to market earlier. Ergo, they did not have time by the company's decision to wait for that technology to have its genesis.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Virtual Boy was necessarily rushed because it was actually in development for a very long time. But I think at some point they were just like, we've got a fish or cut bait.
That's what I mean, like kind of not necessarily rushing so much as just like kind of cutting it off.
Yeah, I think at some point they said, we've got to lock down the feature set here. This is what we're going with. Sorry, it's not perfect, but we just got to do this. So yeah, that is where Game Boy or Virtual Boy ended up. And you know, Gunpei Yokoi, the kind of the mastermind behind the Virtual Boy, was extremely bullish on the SLA technology and its possibilities for gaming. But even he like realized as Virtual Boy was coming to market, he said there was just like this kind of sense of unease. Binge's article quotes him as saying it was like the sensation of being slowly fried to death in a pan that's being slowly heated up. You know, like the parable of the frog that is boiled to death by turning up the temperature one degree at a time. It was just that like sense of unease. Something's not right, but you can't really identify it. So he knew that it wasn't going to quite work. But at the same time, they still like he still believed in the technology. And I will say that Nintendo R&D 1, they went to bat for this thing. They made some really interesting games, and they were up against a lot of limitations. I mean, besides the technology, at some point, I think Hiroshi Yamauchi was like, oh, this isn't going to work out, so you guys can't use like standard Mario games on here. You can't have a Super Mario Brothers game. So that's why you have Mario Clash, which is a reworking of Mario Brothers, and Wario Land, which is like the weird version of Mario Brothers, so Super Mario Brothers. So yeah, so they were kind of limited. Like, there was definitely never going to be a Zelda game on Virtual Boy. And yeah, it didn't catch on anywhere. It sold extremely poorly in Japan, a bit better in America, but you know, supposedly there were like 750,000 units sold altogether. Like, when a Nintendo system doesn't hit a million units, even Wii U did that. Come on.
Yeah.
I think I want to talk about the context for what virtual reality meant to people in 1995, because now you can go to the store and buy the virtual reality thing for your PS4.
Or for your Switch. It's made of cardboard.
Or for your Switch, too. That's exactly. Right. It's made of rugged cardboard.
Yes, but, durable cardboard.
At the time,
season technology.
At the time, it did. It was sort of like if you go back to the 60s or 50s and watch those sort of educational films, like, oh, it's the House of Tomorrow and the Car of Tomorrow. VR was very much like that. Like, in the future, all the games will be VR, and you'll enter a virtual world and get in a virtual line when you go virtual shopping. And
I that remember was the that episode of Star future. Trek: The Next Generation.
Yeah,
the thing flying into their eyeballs. It was great.
But Nintendo, like they do a lot of the time, is they want to fake the promised future, or they want to fake the cutting edge technology with a very, very low cost solution that will fool you into thinking that. But if you weren't alive in 1995, that was just the dream that you were promised, is like everything will be VR.
95 was the release of Lawnmower Man, wasn't it?
I think it was like 93.
Okay.
Yeah, or 92.
At least living in Chicago or some other major cities, you would may have had the chance to have the limited experience at Virtual Worlds, which is where I had my first virtual reality experience with playing MechWarrior. BattleTech Firestorm. Bah, it wasn't really virtual reality, but getting into the giant pod gave you the sensation of being in a separate place. But next to the MechWarrior centers, they had the virtuality sets, where it was like a kind of like a proto VR headset or a proto Virtual Boy that did strap onto your head but weighed like 10 pounds. It was huge, and you'd have to stand inside of what I can only describe as a extremely large apparatus that was like a giant base you would stand on, with these arms that came up and another ring around your waist area. So it would like kind of have these proto motion sensors, and you would have a VR experience, albeit very limited and basic, with like the most generic kind of 3D polygonal graphics you can imagine. And one of those units went for at least 10 to 20 grand.
Wow.
And that was very early 90s. I'm talking 90 to 92-ish. There was one at North Pier in Chicago, which was a place across from Navy Pier. It was like almost a little shopping mall. And there was also a hologram store, a laser tag place, and an arcade there. So this was my wonderland. I loved going to North Pier. But that was my VR experience. And Virtual Boy was literally nothing like that.
Yeah.
But it was still really cool. But that was the closest concept to virtual reality, short of what was presented in television, that there was publicly available at the time.
Yeah, I never encountered those VR machines. The one I would see on TV all the time, like in news segments, you'd see like, it's called virtual reality, and there was Cyber World and play video games. It was things like Dactyl Nightmare was the one game they would show off a lot. I think it was like the most popular virtual reality game of that era where
they had that in the virtuality machines.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I would just see footage of that. And that, even that I saw parodied on TV shows, like that specific game. So it felt like that was the most popular game of that time. But I was fascinated by it, but I never actually had the chance to play it. And I'm sure I wouldn't want to pay $5 or $10 or whatever.
It was like $10 a pop. Yeah. And it, yeah. I wouldn't go so far as to call it good, but it was just so outside of your normal experience that it didn't matter and you were going to pay to play it anyway because there was nothing else like it.
Yeah, at the time Virtual Boy launched in 1995, you know, Pac-Man VR was a thing that was happening. But to give you context, this actual virtual reality experience was not something you could buy. It was something that was a massive installation that toured. And like it would come to your town and you could go play Pac-Man in VR. That is kind of like how high end the VR experience was, how expensive it was. The proposition of Virtual Boy was for $250, we are going to give you the ability to experience virtual reality, even though it's not. But this is very much Nintendo. You know, we talked about this in the Game Boy panel we just recorded. Nintendo is all about the inexpensive approach to creating things and to give people, you know, those experiences to fake it and make it affordable. Like, you know, Game Boy was not a console level, you know, console quality experience in terms of tech or games, but it was close and it was really cheap. And, you know, that's a philosophy that's gone back. It's part of Nintendo's DNA. You look back in the 70s, one of my favorite things to talk about is Nintendo's RC car, the Lefty RX, which is a remote control car from back when remote control cars were a very new thing and pretty expensive. And theirs cost half as much as everyone else's. And the reason for that is because Gunpei Yokoi was like, what if we took out the mechanisms that allowed you like free wheel drive? What if you could only turn in one direction? Because when you're racing on a racetrack, it's a circle and you're just going to go. You're just going to turn in that one direction. So just give this car the ability to turn left and you cut back. You cut the cost on mechanisms. You cut the cost on the electronics and the remote. It's cheaper. And, you know, kids can have this sort of reduced quality experience, but it's still a chance to give them it gives them a chance to play with a remote control car, which they wouldn't be able to afford if it were full price. But at half price, they can do it. And that's been a cornerstone of their business for a long time.
Yeah.
And Virtual Boy was very much along those lines. It's just it was misaimed and it was compromised a lot in the process of development because new details came up, new realities. Like I mentioned, the radiation shield. Like that's not something they had accounted for originally, but then they thought, well, what if we accidentally kill children with, radiation poisoning? Maybe we shouldn't do that. So, you know, when you start taking realities like that into account, things change and stray from the original design document.
And there were signs even in Japan at the time that it, maybe kind of tying in with the whole sense of dread thing you were talking about earlier from Gunpei Yokoi, Jeremy. Just before the launch of the Virtual Boy, Famitsu put out a 100-page issue called Virtual Boy Tsushin, just covering all the launch games, all the upcoming games, that kind of thing. They had a thing detailing like what stores would probably still have them. We're still taking reservations for them at this point. But on the very next page, they had a reader survey, where they asked readers of Famitsu whether or not they were planning on buying the Virtual Boy or not. And your choices were yes, no, or, you know, on the fence, basically. And only, 57% said that they were not going to buy it right out of the gate, with only 19% saying that they were.
Man.
So, and this was
even worse,
before
worse
launch.
Trump approval ratings.
Yeah. So it, you know, signs were definitely there maybe from the beginning.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't help that I feel like because those signs were on the wall, you know, the writing was on the wall, the signs were there. I think publishers said, we need to just get our games for this. Like, we've invested in developing games for this. Let's get them out the door. And so there is this sense of Virtual Boy games not really feeling as fully baked as they should. That's been the nagging sensation that I've had with almost every game I've played. There are very few games that feel, you know, fully formed, fully realized, like, oh yeah, this is what they were really after. For the most part, it feels like, man, this is almost really good. And if they had had another 6 months to work on this, it could have been amazing, but the Virtual Boy wasn't around another 6 months, so they just had to get it out the door.
Not wrong. It's just like everything first party came out a lot better, flat out. Or maybe not everything, but everything that was produced first party by Nintendo, it feels more fully realized than a lot of the third party stuff. Third party stuff was just kind of like, well, let's just kick this out the door.
Yeah, there are a few happy exceptions, mm-hmm. but yes, for the most part, like, you know, some of the games that came out, like, are generally regarded as, like, sincerely not having been completed. Virtual Lab is probably the most infamous of these. It's also the most expensive of these. It is a game that costs like $2,000 to $3,000 now. And the irony is that it is a game that apparently they didn't actually finish. So yeah, that's not a good sign. That's bad. The system did last a little longer in the US than in Japan. So we got releases until like March 96, and I think December 95 was pretty much the end of Japanese releases. So the very you know, the postscript, the coda to Virtual Boy's existence are Waterworld
and oh, no.
Nestor's Funky Bowling. So like right there, you know, those are some really weird licensed game choices. I mean, Waterworld, I get it. They were like, wow, Kevin Costner dances with wolves. This guy is huge. A game or a movie that he personally creates as a passion project with this kind of budget, it's going to be so good. No. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it makes sense that they snatched up this license, but it's so fitting that the only versions of Waterworld that came out were for Virtual Boy and Saturn, two very doomed systems, just like the movie.
I guess you could argue whether or not that's worse than an SD Gundam game or not, though.
I haven't played that one yet. Is it bad?
Brian's excited for this one. I mean,
every system back then had an SD Gundam game.
Exactly.
I've suffered through several of them already for Game Boy Works.
Is that why you're on a hiatus? From Game Boy Works?
It's part of it, yes.
You do not want to play this game then, because it is absolutely more of the same. Well, sorry.
But it has like shooting elements to it.
It does.
It's like a strategy game, but then you're like killing stuff.
You go, when you attack, you basically have a brief segment where you are moving around shooting at the enemy unit, but then it goes into your favorite, which is the side view battles that you love so much on the Game
Similar
Boy version.
SD Gundam, SD Sengoku Den, Kunitori Monogatari?
Precisely that.
Yeah. Love that game.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. It is a mouthful of crap.
Wow. I feel like the Virtual Boy was a secret initiative by the bowling industry. Is there any
yes,
sort
it
of...
it really was.
There are two bowling games on Virtual Boy. But only one of them is affordable. Nestor's Funky Bowling will cost you $70 complete. Virtual Bowling will cost you $2,500.
When I saw your video on Nestor's Funky Bowling, it answered a lot of questions for me. There's an extended universe. There's at least one more character in that world that we never see in the comics.
Yeah, yep.
Virtual Bowling is $2,500?
Something like that. It's
That's
crazy. But I feel like with that game, they wanted to have a licensed bowling game, but then they realized there are no known bowlers.
Probably so. Yeah. Nestor's Funky Bowling is just weird. I guess we're talking about the games now.
It was the first game I owned for the Virtual Boy.
I mean, sure. Like, you knew who Nestor was, right? You
had Nintendo Power. Well, that's why I had to have it. Like, I want the licensed game that has Nestor. It was Power to Nestor.
But the thing is, Nestor had no longer been in Nintendo Power for at least a year by the time they came out. They had ended his comic. He was no longer a character that existed, and yet they made a game about him. They published this game. That is, it's so Virtual Boy.
Yeah, and that second era of comics is no good. Also, because they're not Japanese, but
once Howard left, they gave it to the Valiant Comics team.
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, that's happened.
It was the post.
Yeah, that's what happened.
It was the post Howard Phillips time skip where he just disappeared, and Nestor had his own adventures. But I think they phased him out in favor of like the Super Metroid comics and Star Fox comics. I remember those being much more popular concurrently.
Before.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they were concurrent. They just phased out Nestor. They were just like, okay, we're done. And good riddance, really. Like, he came back. Bill Mudrin drew an amazing comic, just a beautiful little comic for Nintendo Power's final issue.
Yeah, that was really sweet. It was great. Yeah.
It was like the one good thing that has ever happened to Nestor. Like, Bill gave him so much more than Nestor actually deserved. but yeah, it was a very sweet comic. But Nestor's Funky Bowling is more like what Nestor actually deserved. It's kind of this half-baked bowling game. Some people did comment on my video to say, like, this is my favorite bowling game, to which I asked, like, how many bowling games have you actually played? They did not respond.
It's just the red purgatory that Nestor lives in now.
I think so. He and his twin sister, Hester,
God.
Who was never in the comics. But I think, you know, they just realized, like, we have to provide a female avatar, which is good. But instead of, like, you know, using an existing character, I guess there were no women in Nestor's world. So they were like, oh, by the way, he has a twin sister who is 3 minutes older than him and likes to show him up. Okay, sure.
Why? He got around. He was also in Pylowing 64.
No, that was Lark.
Time. Oh, whatever.
That was not Nestor, sir.
Wait,
that
who?
Was Lark.
He has another twin?
I don't know. His name is Lark, though. He has nothing to do with Nestor. Wink, wink. He was also referenced in the ending to the Earth.
Weird.
He's like the general of the Galactic Federation or something. And there's one other game that he's like.
I think he's in the localization of Dragon Warrior.
What?
The first Dragon Warrior.
I don't think so.
I remember some RPG there being a reference to Nestor. Huh. I'm sorry if I'm misremembering
this. Maybe. He's referenced in a couple of games, but like every game that is in like has any kind of Nestor involvement is Nintendo R&D3 developed. And you know, they're the same team that made Star Tropics. So they were just like, they were tuned into the US market. They were like, these American kids, they love them some Nestor. So we got Nestor's Funky Bowling.
But I did love me some Nestor.
Really? Okay. I referred to him in less than favorable terms in my video, and some people,
I know you did.
People,
I watched it.
People decided to stand for him, and I'm like, okay. All right.
I'm one of those people. I didn't comment to Stan, but I stand for Nestor just a little.
Okay.
You just love the part where his hair comes off when you're not doing so well.
Yeah, like, that's wow, it's an alopecia. I mean, sometimes I bowl much worse than a 9 out of 10, and I do not lose my hair immediately. It's been a long, slow process.
Oh, by the way, Nestor is referenced in Dragon Warrior 1.
Okay.
A knight asked, hast thou seen Nestor?
Oh, my god.
And because of how tied in it was to Nintendo Power being a marketing tool, I feel like they were winking at the kids.
Right. Yes. Okay, fair enough.
But I'm doing a Retronauts shorter episode about Nestor and the Nestor universe now. You've inspired me, Jeremy.
Nice.
We should revisit those comics. They're really good. Right? The early ones are great.
I hate Nestor in all of them. I'm like, stop being such a little twerp.
But he gets owned in every comic
by the
bow tie, and I'm like, I can get it.
You can identify with that.
Yes. The quiet, polite, reserved man with a bow tie. I'm like, okay, yeah. Now I know. Now I understand so much more about myself. This has been a journey of discovery.
Howard.
So, folks, what game experiences have you had on Virtual Boy that you love or hate? Bob, you were excluded from this, but you are welcome to chime in.
I'll tell you what I've liked to have had.
Secondhand experiences, passive smoke, basically.
I would like to see or play Wario Land for the game, Virtual Boy.
I'm astonished you have not.
Gosh darn it, I really should have brought mine. I literally just bought that game today. I have a working Virtual Boy. Why didn't I bring it?
I'll have the experience at some point, but I love the Wario Land games. I've done episodes on the Wario Land games and WarioWare. That is the one missing piece of the puzzle, and it looks like it is, like you said, Jeremy, like an incomplete game or a half-baked game.
No, I feel like that one is complete. Hmm. I feel like that one is actually
It seemed
polished.
Fairly short for a Wario Land
I mean,
game.
It's like, it's 13 stages, but each stage is unique.
Hmm. I guess it's before Wario Land 2. It's like between Wario Land 1 and Wario Land 2.
Wario Land 1 has many more stages, but they're all much shorter.
Yeah.
Whereas Wario Land for Virtual Boy, you have 13 stages, and each one of them is fairly sprawling. Like, you know, you have a 20-minute time limit, and at first you're like, well, that's not that long. But in some of the later levels, you really strain up against the 20 minutes to complete it. So it's a good, I would say, like 4 to 5 hour game, which is a pretty solid length for a 2D platformer.
I mean, they're really working with the limitations of the console there, where you're only playing in limited bursts.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I would say, so my picks are tied between that and Mario Clash, because I love the original Mario Brothers universe in that environment and those characters, and I love seeing different versions of them, and they really haven't revisited them very often.
Yeah, Mario Clash is a game that I think is not fully baked. It feels incomplete. It's really, really challenging, and apparently it has 99 stages, and then once you get to the 99th stage, there's no ending. It just loops over on level one, but just like crazy hard. But the thing is, there's no continue system. And like I said, it's really hard. So I can't imagine actually making it all the way to level 99 without, you know, save states on an emulator. Like, it's just, it's bizarrely difficult. There's no level select past like level 20, I think. Hmm. And there's no continue system. And it's really challenging. We could talk about Mario Clash. Either of you played Mario Clash at all?
I have.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on it? I mean, definitely it is cut from the cloth of Mario Brothers, but it's different.
Yeah, and I would also say that it doesn't feel like it was completed, but it doesn't feel horribly incomplete either. It's not like there's gaping holes where a game should be.
No, it's more in the sense of like, oh, they needed to really like fine tune this.
It's polish. Mm-hmm. It's missing polish.
Which is unusual for Nintendo.
Yeah.
True.
But It's a good game. It's not a great game necessarily, but it's a solid iteration on the Mario Brothers formula. It's a little bit of a different take, just a slight extra dimension. So it's just different enough to feel unique to the Virtual Boy while still maintaining the Mario Brothers formula,
which
is very basic.
I wanted to like it more than I did because it is some of the original creators of Mario Brothers returning to a game that, you know, helped put Nintendo on the map. And it just didn't quite connect for me. I think it's neat, but I feel like they really need to revisit this game. Give us the definitive edition. Like, put this on Labo VR, goddammit.
I want...
like, give it to us.
It had never happened for 3DS, which upsets me, but I would want a collection to be released of Virtual Boy games.
They had some Mario Tennis like reference in Labo VR's tutorial.
I haven't played with
Labo
yet.
But it's not the game. It's just like apparently I haven't used Labo VR yet because it just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
And I've been here, but apparently like one of the tutorials is you putting like an avatar for you puts his face into a Virtual Boy and sees Mario Tennis. And I'm like, how can you do this? I mean, when they announced Labo VR, I was like, give us frickin' Virtual Boy, Virtual Console. And here they are teasing us after just leaving us completely in the cold with 3DS, which was so obvious.
It was screaming to be made, practically. Like, you've made the 3D tech. You finally got it portable. Just do the thing.
Yeah, I recently talked to some people I know at Nintendo, and they were like, hey, you know, it'd be cool to chat with you sometime about Game Boy. I was like, well, I could talk about Virtual Boy, too, and, you know, like in an official capacity, sure. And they were like, I don't think we're going to talk about Virtual Boy anytime soon.
That's so disappointing.
So take that as you will. But I think Nintendo just doesn't really like to engage that part of its history. But there are good games on there that need to be set free. At the very least, Atlas needs to put Jack Brothers on Labo VR. That would be amazing.
They could make it an Easter egg in any number of SMT games.
They could. Shin Megami Tensei 5, perhaps, which is coming to Switch. Slap the Virtual Boy the Labo cardboard VR thing on there, and oh wow, you can play
like that. It would be such a cool Easter egg. Just there's not that many games. Just give them to us. And I know they don't want to acknowledge it, but it's better when they do acknowledge it.
But I feel like there's less problem. There are fewer problems with third parties because they've got no skin in the game. They've got these properties that, you know, they're super esoteric. Like Panic Bomber is a perfectly decent Bomberman puzzle game. I would play it again on a non Virtual Boy system.
And I mean, they reference the Virtual Boy in Tomodachi Life.
They reference it all over the place. I think anytime you see someone from R&D 1 work on a game, you know, Tomodachi Life was Yoshio Sakamoto, the Metroid guy. Like, I feel like everyone at R&D 1 really put their hearts into Virtual Boy. And, you know, even though R&D 1 doesn't exist anymore, it's SPD or whatever. Like, the folks who worked on Virtual Boy are still at Nintendo, some of them. And, like, they want to stomp for it sometimes.
It's all over WarioWare for sure.
Yeah.
All the failures are there. Rob, Virtual Boy.
It was in the sticker arcade.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, I gave that thing money once.
Yes.
I did a couple times, not a lot of money, but I just kind of like UFO catchers, so I'm an easy sell for UFO catcher-related things.
So any other notable gaming experiences that you've had on Virtual Boy?
Let's see. I mean, like, my experiences growing up were super limited to Blockbuster Video.
Maybe we could just talk about the games. There's not a whole lot, so...
No.
I could even recite them chronologically now because this has been drilled into my brain.
I want an English translation of Shadow over Innsmouth.
Yes. Oh, there is one, actually.
Oh, is there now?
There's a fan translation that came out like 2 months ago.
Oh, well, that's recent, and that's why I didn't know it was a thing. Yeah.
The interesting thing about that game is that there's a lot of English language reviews online saying about how, its Japanese title is Innsmouth no Yakata, which is like the mansion of Innsmouth or Innsmouth Manor, whatever you want to call it. And there are people saying that, it was named this because there was a Japanese movie adaptation of Shadow over Innsmouth, but I actually haven't been able to find any evidence of that. It was just called Innsmouth no Kage in Japan. So I think this is just a Lovecraft inspired game as opposed to something that's like specifically related to Shadows over Innsmouth.
So should I localize it in my video as Innsmouth or Innsmouth? Innsmouth.
Innsmouth.
I hate the Innsmouth one so much.
Well, not Innsmouth, but Innsmouth.
Yes.
It should be Innsmouth.
With a TH. But the Japanese title is always Innsmouth.
Yeah, which gives you
a very different impression of what it's going to be. It's like, there's a cute little mouse traveling through the hotel.
Oh, no.
You have to collect all the cheese before the cat finds you.
Go.
Oh, my God. It's it's beyond my comprehension.
I am a huge Lovecraft fan, even though he was a big old racist man. But
he was actually the worst, but he wrote interesting things.
Yeah. He was the first Redditor.
Like, I totally accept that he was not a good person necessarily, but it's Innsmouth.
Yeah, it has go with to the one Innsmouth. That's actually correct. Like, it's incredibly obvious that that's
like,
what
if you're saying the
be.
Japanese
either
title,
way, people are going
to say Innsmouth.
They will. But yeah.
Okay.
Innsmouth.
All right. Well, that was an unnecessary sidebar, actually. But yeah, so let's think through the chronology of Virtual Boy. Mario Tennis, have you played it?
Yes, absolutely.
What do you think?
Great game. Not deep or anything, but short, fun, easy to pick up and play. A good way to showcase the depth feature on the system.
Yep.
It's cute. It's snappy. It's easy to understand.
It has amazing sprite work.
Yes, it really does.
Sprites in that game.
Cool.
Like when I sat down to actually play it, I was like, holy crap, these are the biggest 2D Mario animated sprites I've ever seen. And I think they are the biggest 2D animated sprites for Mario characters that any Nintendo game ever featured, honestly. Like you have Mario, Donkey Kong Jr., Peach, Toad, Koopa Troopa, Luigi. They're all like gloriously animated in very high resolution, large sprites for the foreground and background.
Well, it was part of why I loved it when I played it in Blockbuster. I had never seen anything quite like it. It was pretty impressive, even if it was red.
Yeah, I mean, you take that into monochrome grayscale, and it's just like a great looking Game Boy game. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. One of those characters would fill the Game Boy screen. They're easily so big. And they're also nicely animated. Like, Luigi always looks so hangdog whenever he misses the ball. And whenever Peach, you know, gets a point, she, like, kind of wiggles her butt. It's like, just everyone has so much personality and so much charm.
You could call it an extension of NES Tennis and Game Boy Tennis, but I think it's the true start of Mario Tennis as a franchise.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's the very first Mario's Tennis game, and it really does feel like...
That's very popular.
The first time where Nintendo was like, what if we took these characters that everyone loves and put them in a sports game as the active participants? And, you know, you had Mario's golf before that, but that's not really an active sport. It's much more passive.
And his name wasn't even in the title. It was just NES Tournament Golf.
That was NES Golf.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's like the one lasting series that started on Virtual Boy is Mario Tennis.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
Yeah. It does have kind of that legacy. And, you know, this, it does feel like sort of the rough draft for Mario's Tennis, you know, the future games. It doesn't have the RPG elements that Camelot would add. And it doesn't have all the various modes and features that you see in the current Mario Tennis games. But it's a start, and it's pretty darned good. Yeah. So let's see. Game number two was Galactic Pinball, I think. Yeah, that sounds about right. And that's interesting because it's the Super Metroid team immediately following up Super Metroid to create a pinball game. That's not the project I would have put that particular group of people on, but what the hell? It's a really good pinball game.
It is. It absolutely is. It's nothing to write home about. I mean, it's pinball, but if you like pinball games, your options were pretty limited for good pinball games at that time, too. Like, I had the very rare experience of having a TurboGrafx and playing Alien Crush and Devil Crush. But outside of
those
that...
Those were the exceptions, yes.
Then they were exceptions with a big asterisk.
Yeah, they're only second to Hell pinball games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the thing about Galactic Pinball that's really cool is it makes great use of the parallax graphics to give you the whole pinball table in a single view and to still give you that sense of depth because, you know, in most pinball games of the era, you would scroll up and down. You have like the table divided into two or three screens. This didn't have to do that. You could have the whole table in there. And because of the parallax visualization, you were like, oh, like it's easy to follow the ball. Everything works. It was one of the first Nintendo developed games to use fully pre-rendered graphics, which, you know, that's good or bad, depending on your taste. But it worked here because everything is, like, mechanical. And, you know, it's supposed to be hard edge. It's not like human characters or something that look weird and robotic. It's a pinball table with steel flippers and balls and things like that. And it has lots of fun bonus features, including a Metroid-inspired minigame where you, like, control Samus in her spaceship blowing stuff up. Hmm. There's lots of interesting weird modes. Like, each table has its own theme, and the colony theme, there's, like, you'll have a mode where asteroids start colliding with your colony, and you have to, like, shoot them out of the sky, and it just, like, is this weird, random, like, gameplay break. But, yeah, they put a lot of thought and creativity in the game. What about Teleroboxer? That was one I played a long time ago and was like, wow, this is neat. Like the sprites in that one are wild. It has amazing graphics, like I would love to see that game revisited sometime.
They should have called it Sprite Work Punch Out Future or something like that, because it's very super Punch Outy. I've not played these games. I'm going through your vicariously through your experience, but it I played a lot of Super Punch Out. It feels very much like an extension of that, but even more complex and more difficult from the very beginning.
I was actually surprised that I didn't find that was a working title for it or something, to be honest.
So looking around, you know, at the provenance of these two games, Super Punch Out was a Nintendo R&D 3 series, and Teleroboxer was Nintendo R&D 1. And, you know, it's all owned by Nintendo, but I have found that within these Japanese companies especially, there is a sense of like, well, you know, we have these different groups, and that is their game.
Right.
And it's not on us to go in and use their property or their idea. Like, we have to do our own thing because it's not our, we don't have the right to mess with their creation. So that is why that didn't happen, I think. I think it would have been great as a Punch-Out game, but I do like the fact that it's, you know, it's basically like, what's it called? Real Steel. Like, you know, 20 years before Real Steel happened.
Have you ever played the Real Steel game, sidebar? Because it is awful.
I bet it is. Yeah,
absolutely awful. I had to play it.
Licensed this one.
I had to play it in a mystery game tournament, and
oh boy,
oh woof, it was so bad. Like, buttons just didn't do anything.
But yeah, getting away from the Punch Out concept actually does liberate the game to be its own thing to a certain degree. And so you have these like huge multi-jointed robots, and they can do weird things with their animations. Like, there's one guy, you have to punch him in the head, but his head keeps dropping into his abdomen. So it's really hard to punch his head when it like suddenly is in his stomach. So, you know, you couldn't do that with Great Tiger or Bald Bull. So, I mean, so having the robots is makes a difference.
Super Punch-Out was pretty wacky, but I guess when ARMS came out for the Switch, I feel like that's sort of, they're doing the same thing that they did with Teleroboxer, where it's just like futury, robot-y, wacky stuff that is not tied to a ring and humans.
Yeah, I mean, it's Punch-Out-esque, but its own thing. And it's cool that they do that. Like, put some different spins on it. That's fine. Anyway, yeah, it's a cool game, but it's really hard. Very, very hard. It's got a very complicated control scheme. Like, it uses both D-pads and, like, all the face buttons. That's the weird thing. We haven't talked about Virtual Boy's controller, which is, like, very forward-thinking and also very strange.
It also makes it extremely hard to emulate, too. Rather not satisfying to emulate, right. I guess I should say.
Yes, they knew like dual control sticks was going to be the future of 3D gaming, but it was before analog sticks really came along. So you get two face buttons, two start and select buttons, and then shoulder buttons. And games like Teleroboxer make use of all those buttons, and it's a little hard to wrap your head around. Like, to be able to block attacks and things like that, you have to press two buttons at once, and like, Each D-pad controls your fighter's one of their arms. So it's a lot to wrap your head around. It's complicated, but like, I get what they were doing, and I'm sure if I spent a lot of time with that game, I could get really good, but I don't have time in my life to devote to learning this extremely idiomatic and unique fighting scheme.
I feel like the development of the N64 is happening. They overlapped a bit. Mm-hmm. And I would read interviews with Miyamoto saying that he regretted the C buttons. I wonder if a second D-pad was on the table for the N64 as well.
I don't know. Maybe.
I hate that controller.
N64?
The Trident, yeah.
Yeah. It'd be fine if it was more durable.
Taint good.
Not a fan. It doesn't mean I hate the N64, but I really hate that controller.
So Red Alarm, what do you guys think of that one?
I think that's the game that a vendor at MGC a few years ago had it beat up loose in a bin, and I offered them $5, and they whipped out a list. And then I hate it when people whip out a list, first of all. And then they said $17.99, and I'm like, okay, bye.
Yeah, okay.
That's too much for Red Alarm.
That's my experience with that game entirely. Sorry.
That's okay.
I pretty much agree with what you said earlier, Jeremy. And in fact, in that same issue of Famitsu I mentioned earlier, and I was reading that earlier, there was one reviewer who thought it was really great, thought it was, you know, necessary for anybody who had one of those systems to have. There's another guy who said, I don't understand this. The graphics make no sense to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm pretty in that camp too.
Yep.
There's so many lines. Like, it's, I mean, it's obvious that it took inspiration from Star Fox. Anyone can tell that. But Star Fox had polygons. Right.
Feels more
this
like
is just lines. Mm-hmm. Lines going everywhere. The game.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, like, you play and with, you know, with the 3D visualization, you can definitely kind of sense what they were going for. But it is a game that would have worked a lot better with proper polygons that just, but the hardware wasn't powerful enough. And that's a weird thing about Virtual Boy is they wanted to do 3D, but they didn't give it a processor capable of really doing 3D graphics. So it's a lot of like fancy sprite work or, you know, what do you call them? Wireframes. Yes.
Like Battlezone.
Yes, exactly. So you kind of, it's kind of one or the other. Let's see. The fifth game in the lineage was the worst game. And that is Virtual League Baseball by Kemco, and it is complete crap.
I have literally nothing to add there. I'm sorry.
Don't ever play it. It's the, like, I think no one bought that game probably because of the Chili Dog Farts advertising.
That's the game. Wow, that's all I know it from.
It really is a great description of the game itself. Like, it is, I've played a lot of 8-bit baseball games, and it's the worst. It's not 8-bit, but it's worse than 8-bit baseball games.
It doesn't matter.
Weirdly, in Japan, I think it was part of the Pro Yaku series, which is a big series.
Mm. I thought it was Famista, wasn't it?
I won't claim that I remember for sure, but it was one of the big Japanese baseball series. I don't remember which one for sure.
Yeah, well, it sucks.
Yeah.
And it's a mistake.
It is.
The other sports game, though, was just called Golf, and it's actually really good. It's by TNEsoft, who were like the golf pros at that point. I'm not a, like, in real life, I have zero interest in golfing, but golf video games can actually be pretty enjoyable. Like, they're kind of chill.
They can.
And, you know, you kind of get a good rhythm, and every hole on the green is unique and requires a different approach. And then there'll be dynamic wind elements, and it's really well done. And, it's actually really similar to their, what was it called? YLA Country Club on Super NES, which also used like a similar sort of polygon rendering system. But the Virtual Boy was actually more powerful than Super NES in some senses. So it plays more smoothly and you know, just looks better, you know, given the color limitations than the same game basically on Super NES. So I'm actually a fan of that one. I would play it again. Let's see. What are some other games that came out? Well, we've talked about Virtual Boy Wario Land.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to add more to that? Like, I think it's a really fun and interesting game. It really is kind of like the midpoint between Wario Land
it's
1 and 2.
It's easily one of the best games on the Virtual Boy, mm-hmm. and it would be a good game outside of the Virtual Boy.
Mm-hmm.
It is a good game.
You should play that game. With one lens image visualization. Mm-hmm. You don't need 3D in that game.
No,
except,
you don't.
Well, okay, against the final boss, yes. The final boss kind of sucks, and I don't like him very much, but that's really the only time that 3D is essential to the game. Otherwise,
you should still play this game.
Yeah, do it. Just don't beat the final boss. One thing that's really interesting about Wario Land for Virtual Boy is that it is a continuous world. If you want to go back to a previous stage, you actually have to go backward through the game, like through the level that you've completed, and then take the elevator down to the previous level.
Wow.
So if you want to like backtrack and find the treasures you missed, you actually have to do the legwork for it, which is interesting. It really encourages you to, you know, really poke around and seek all the treasures you can find, because you have to find 10 treasures in order to get the best ending and as much money as possible.
Of course,
because it's Wario. If you get the best ending, there's like a bunny girl on a magic carpet with you. It's
sure.
But also equally good is Jack Brothers, which is a twin stick shooter, like a combo maze game, twin stick shooter based on Shin Megami Tensei. And none of that makes sense, but it's great.
Yep.
Like the idea of a twin stick shooter is so perfect on Virtual Boy because it makes use of the dual D-pads. And because it is like maze based, You're just shooting at right angles, you know, orthagonal directions. So
you don't
it
need
doesn't,
sticks.
Right, exactly. It's fine that it's D-pads. Although I will say that Retronauts Binge Edwards has made some Virtual Boy dual stick controller like joysticks, and playing Jack Brothers with dual joysticks is an extremely expensive indulgence that I feel deeply guilty about, but it's really good. Like, it is so unnecessary. It is so, yeah, it's just ridiculous.
A lot of things we do are entirely unnecessary, but we do them because we can, exactly. And that's the point.
It is a good way to play that game. And I encourage anyone who ever has the opportunity to do that to do so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see. What else is there? Panic Bomber. You guys ever played that one?
Never had a chance, honestly.
Like, you know, it's actually on Wii U Virtual Console.
Is it?
It was released for a lot of different systems. And the PC Engine version showed up as an import game on Wii U Virtual Console.
It's very cute.
But Panic Bomber actually has its best graphics, best animation and everything on Virtual Boy. It's really weird. But they put a bunch of like depth effects and like backgrounds and stuff into it instead of just giving you like abstract patterns around the wells. But it's kind of like a Puyo game, except it's based around creating explosions and chains with bombs, because of course it is. It's Bomberman. So it's a really unique and interesting game.
I'll actually stand up for Vertical Force, okay. Which is one that I don't hear a lot of people talking about.
I'm not deeply in love with it, honestly.
I wouldn't say I'm deeply in love with it. Like, this is all kind of on like the Virtual Boy scale. But it is the only classic shooter, shmup, whatever you want to call it, for that system. And on the merits of being a shooter, it isn't spectacular. Like, it doesn't do anything that you haven't seen a shooter does before, but it does use the 3D. You can go kind of bottom plane, upper plane. And I think the system with the options is really kind of neat, how you can have them autopilot themselves or you can choose to control them. I mean, nobody chooses the autopilot option, let's be honest, but it is kind of neat that it's there. In terms of being a shooter, it's not actually that difficult. Like, it is pretty clearable, even for somebody who doesn't have like a super high level of skill.
I don't know.
I got to the
fourth stage, and all of a sudden the difficulty goes way up.
I may have conveniently forgotten about that part.
Whoa, what? Yeah, it's just like all of a sudden it says, you know, actually I hate you, and you're going to die.
Yeah.
But up until that point, it's pretty reasonable and interesting, but. The problem I have is that the graphics are so busy.
They're a little busy.
It's a really like visually distracting game, especially when you play it in 3D. It's just like there's so much happening. The details are just, or the graphics are just too detailed. So that's my complaint.
Sure, I can definitely see that. And I didn't spend a lot of time with it, but I feel like if I would have bought a Virtual Boy back in 1995, I probably would have bought that,
and probably
would have played it quite a bit by this point.
And then we get to Waterworld, which is not the worst game in the world. It's not as bad.
A good game.
It's not great. It's not even good. But I get what they were going for, and it's interesting. It's somewhere between Defender and Asteroids. That's it. Yes, because it's like most of the action takes place from a top-down perspective, and you're like shooting at things. No, it's not the top down. The top-down perspective is like between stages. It's more like down in the action, kind of behind the shoulder, but it does play a lot like Asteroids, and especially when it does pull back between stages and you can like move around, you're like, oh yeah, it's like Asteroids. But then it's kind of Defender because you have these enemies who are coming in and trying to abduct people and you have to stop them. And if you let too many of the people get kidnapped, then all of a sudden you're attacked by dozens and dozens of speedboats. And then you die. It's a strange game. It's really weird, but it's kind of interesting. And it has like this incredibly melancholy music. It's so mournful.
It's a bleak game.
It is. It's extremely bleak. Like the ocean, it's blood red against black. And the music is sad. And there's Dennis Hopper glaring at you. It's a strange game, but
you're drinking your pee optionally.
I mean, that's just a Virtual Boy experience.
It's not recommended, right, folks.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't even put it in the bottom five of Virtual Boy's software library. It's not as bad as reputation would suggest. Like, you assume Waterworld, Virtual Boy, good God, that's going to be some shit. But no, it's not really. It's certainly not as bad as Virtual League Baseball.
True.
Anyway, I think that might be enough about Virtual Boy. I don't know if that I necessarily have anything more to say. Do you guys have anything more?
I'll play it one day.
All right.
Show up my apartment with it.
Cool.
I actually would like to buy one sometime soon. It's been on my list for quite some time, but I just never pulled the trigger. But
right. And the most common issue with them is the ribbon cable.
Right.
Yep. My my Virtual Boy that has been modified, sometimes the virtual cable or the ribbon cable goes out, and I'm like, no, this is not good. Like I get the graphics, but there's like lines through them, and it breaks the 3D effect. So that's no good.
And emulating it is really just not satisfying. Like even if you are using a controller that kind of works with the scheme, like those graphics on a monitor are like they're like Shadow over Innsmouth. You can't look at them. Mm. You can't possibly understand what you're looking at.
It's unknowable. It's non-Euclidean. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it is a system that deserves better than the public has given it.
It was a failure, and it's not great, but it doesn't mean it's terrible.
Right.
And it's much better than a lot of people give it credit for. Right. It has better games than people give it credit for. Mm-hmm. And when you're actually using one in good working condition, it's surprisingly decent.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So kids, go out and buy yourself a Virtual Boy and all the games, especially the ones that cost $2,000. You'll love it.
Make sure you track down SD Gundam, $1,000. Yeah, do you'll have a great time with that, I'm sure.
And of course you want to pay $1,000 for Space Invaders, which is the same as every Space Invaders. Yeah, of course.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so maybe don't chase the four elite, the Shitenno of Virtual Boy. But the other games are worth getting, and the most expensive American game, Jack Brothers, is actually worth playing. So I'm okay with you spending a decent amount of money on that game.
But the U.S. box art is bad.
Oh, yeah, don't get the box version. Just get the bare cart. You don't want the American box art. Actually, what you can do with that game is what I did, which is get the Japanese version complete for like $60 or $70. Mm.
The story is not particularly important to playing
Jack. Jack or the other Jack or the other Jack, they're going to be taken back. They're going to vanish if they don't get back to the fairy world by sunset or something like that.
Yeah. And like every early, at least, Nintendo portable console, it is not region locked. So go nuts.
Yep.
True.
Absolutely. Anyway, yes, I'm done talking about Virtual Boy, and I think all of you are too. So let's wrap here by telling ourselves about ourselves. As you can see, I am Jeremy Parrish, and I've recorded way too much today, and I need to stop talking. So please support all my talking at retronauts.com. You can find Retronauts the podcast on Libsyn and iTunes and probably some other places, Google Play now. It's great. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/retronauts. For $3 a month, you get every episode, that's all 6 or 7 episodes per month, a week early at a higher bit rate than you'll get on the public feed. That's cool. You should support us. It feeds us. It's great. It's a good thing to do. Brian, Caitlin, tell us about yourselves.
You want to go first?
Oh, you can. It's okay.
I'm Brian Clark. I run the site 1millionpower.com, which is, I guess a good analog would be it's sort of like Shmupulations, except weirder. I purposely try to pick weirder things to translate, though. To be fair, one of the most popular ones I've ever done just last week was a Final Fantasy VI developer interview, which took off, and that's not very weird. Everybody loves Final Fantasy VI.
You got to get the bread and butter in there sometime.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I do Virtual Boy and Game Boy stuff, but my most popular video is about The Legend of Zelda. So
right, exactly. And there's lots of Japanese rock music stuff on there as well for anybody who's into that. And pretty soon I'm going to be starting some crossover stuff between games and Japanese rock music.
Sweet Jesus.
Because that exists.
In Crisis Core, hell yeah.
I'm going to skip that one.
Oh.
I'm waiting for my Roller Boys.
You will get Hikaru Genji.
Yeah,
I promise you that.
Hikaru Genji all day.
I did an article about Seikimatsu, an 80s Japanese heavy metal band who had a horrible Famicom game recently. Ooh, so go check that out.
Boy.
I know that game. my name is Caitlin. I set a world record like 8 times. It was kind of cool. And I tweet at SA Caitlin. I have a website that I don't update. It's cipater.net. That's cipater.net. And I like old things. I like to tweet about old things. And I like to talk about old things.
Well, there you go. And finally, Bob Mackey.
Hey, it's everybody. Hey, no, it's me. I've talked a lot too today. Hey, it's me, Bob. I do a lot of podcasts other than Retronauts, and they're all the Talking Simpsons Network. Just go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, and you can find out what we do there. The two free podcasts are Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon, but we have all kinds of stuff on the Patreon, including limited series that you can only hear there. Things about King of the Hill and The Critic and Futurama, it's all happening right there. You might have heard it before, but if not, check it out at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, and I'm on Twitter as Bob Servo. Let me know if you want to hear the Nestor episode. It might be out by the time you hear this.
And finally, we're wrapping up now, but if you were intrigued by the mentions of Virtual Boy Works, by golly, you can go to youtube.com and look for Virtual Boy Works, and you will see where I have systematically discussed every single Virtual Boy game ever released, and even some that weren't, in chronological order in US and then Japan. It didn't come to Europe. And you will learn a lot about Virtual Boy that way, more than you can actually learn in this 1 hour podcast. And you will see visuals too, but not 3D visuals, because that's just crazy talk. YouTube doesn't do that anymore. So please check that out. And we'll be back in a week with another podcast. You're going to love it, I promise.